So my name's Eben, and by day I build a lot of cool stuff at honeycomb.io, where we bring observability to developers, but that's not what I'm going to talk about today. Instead, we're going to talk about queuing theory. Now, I feel like queuing theory has this naming problem. I don't know about you, but I'm not too big on queuing, standing around in lines. And as a dedicated practitioner, I'm skeptical at best as theory of well, as well. So really, what could be worse? But the truth of the matter is that as builders and operators of complex systems, a lot of the time we have these questions about large-scale performance that are relatively challenging to answer. And if we're not willing to accept pure guesswork, then queuing theory gives us a vocabulary as well as a toolkit, a set of insights developed and presented by some really smart researchers to help us approximate the software systems that we build with simpler models that we can reason about mentally or look at analytically. This helps us interpret data that we collect, either by instrumenting production systems or doing artificial benchmarks. And ultimately, this means that armed with a bit of queuing theory, we can better interrogate and better understand the systems that we're trying to build and operate every day. In this talk, I want to make that thesis concrete by talking about how you would build and apply a simple model for a serial system, one that does one thing at a time. And then extend that to talking about modeling parallel systems, how we can reason about load balancing, and use something called the universal scalability law to talk about what happens when you try to scale systems. And finally, I'll summarize some of the things that we see along the way. Before we dive in, an essential caveat: any model is, by definition, a flawed representation of reality. It's reductive. It's also worthless unless somehow backed by real data. If you just make it up, who's to say if it bears any notion to reality? So this is no substitute for gathering data in production and performing controlled experiments. However, having some sort of model helps you interpret that data. If your service has some sort of performance bottleneck, queuing theory may help you identify that bottleneck before you actually hit it. If you're running benchmarks, queuing theory may help you decide whether those benchmarks are a plausible approximation of your true workload. And if you're planning changes, queuing theory can help you decide what their effect is likely to be before you actually invest engineering effort in building them. So let's dive in by talking about modeling serial systems. To motivate this, I want to talk about one of the services that we operate at Honeycomb, our ingestion API. This thing kind of looks like a lot of stateless, user-facing surfaces that you probably have. It receives data from customers, kind of a lot of data. It's highly concurrent, it runs across many servers. It's more or less CPU bound, and it's supposed to be low latency, which for us means target latencies in the sub-millisecond to single-digit millisecond tops range. We run this on AWS, so in principle, we could allocate more or less infinite resources to it. Unfortunately, that would also cost more or less infinite money. So here's our question. Given some performance target, how do we decide how to allocate appropriate compute resources to the service? Well, we could guess, but that would make for a short talk. We could do production scale load testing, you know, either generate an enormous amount of traffic against our production service or create a full scale clone of our production service and generate enormous amounts of traffic against that. This is obviously a pretty good idea, like a worthy undertaking, but also kind of time consuming for a resource constrained engineering team to actually do. So instead, I want to explore an alternate approach. We'll do some like pretty small experiments, the sort of thing you can do in a test environment, and then use a performance model, a queuing model, to try and extrapolate that to resource requirement prediction. So here's the experiment. We know we have n servers, n times k CPU cores at our disposal. What can we do with just one core? So we'll simulate requests arriving uniformly at random, a bunch of independent clients, and we'll measure the observed latency at different levels of throughput. So things start out pretty well. Like I said, low latency, you know, sub-millisecond, couple thousand requests per second. You know, things are looking good. And then at a certain point, things start to look, you know, not so good. So our question is, can we find a model that predicts this behavior and ideally identifies this knee where things start really going south before we hit it? Here's the idea. It'll be basically the simplest model you can imagine. We have one server that does one thing at once. Tasks show up. If the server is busy, they have to wait in a queue. Eventually, the server gets to them. It does some work and returns a result to the client. Intuitively, it's pretty plausible that the busier the server is, in general, the longer tasks will have to wait before they can be serviced. And our question, the thing we want to figure out is, well, as a function of throughput, just how much longer? The other key thing we want to do before diving in is identify the simplifying assumptions that we're making. So we've taken a reasonably mature complex system and radically simplified it to this like abstract tuning model. We've forgotten about the Linux kernel, the networking stack, socket buffers, the Go runtime scheduling, all of that. So we'll see later whether those are plausible simplifications. In particular, here are two things we're assuming. The tests arrive independently and randomly at some average rate lambda. For example, lambda equals, say, 3,000 requests per second. And we'll also assume that the server takes a constant time s, say 200 microseconds, to actually work on each task, like do the real work, and that the server can only process one task at a time. Later, we'll revisit these assumptions and see just how they factor into the results that we get. Step three, you all have stats PhDs, right? Just kidding. There will be a little math, but it will be eminently reasonable. The idea is, well, the state of this system kind of changes over time. Work arrives, it gets completed, it leaves, more work arrives. So let's draw ourselves a picture of what's happening in this system over time. With like really granular instrumentation of your code, you could even draw this picture from real data. So what we want to talk about is, at any given point in time, how much outstanding unfinished work is there at the server? So a task shows up, you know, the outstanding work goes up by the payload of the task by s. Then the server works on the task, it goes down, the server is idle again. And if the throughput is low, then the server is mostly idle, and tasks generally don't have to queue. A task arrives, the server takes care of it, the server is idle, another task shows up, the server takes care of it, server is idle, not too bad. But as throughput increases, it becomes more likely that tasks have to wait. In this picture, we'll denote the time where tasks are being served by orange and the time where tasks are waiting by blue. So this task shows up, but the server is already busy. So it has to wait. There's some waiting time. The server's free again. And then the server works on the task until it's idle again. Make sense? So we have this picture. Can we use it to find what we wanted, which was the average wait time in the system over some large time interval, some steady state? Well, how can we identify average wait as something in this graph? There are two ways. The first, well, the blue parallelogram represents a waiting time for some given task. So the average width of a blue parallelogram is the average waiting time. On the other hand, the average waiting time is also the average height of the graph. Remember, the tasks arrive independently at random. So if we're a task and we show up at some random point in time, the instantaneous outstanding work represents how long we'd have to wait before we'd actually get our turn. So the key idea is that by using the area under the graph, we can relate these two quantities, which will give us an equation that we can solve for the wait time. So over some long time interval t, the area under the graph is the width times the average height. We said that the average height is the average wait time, which we're going to call w. So over some time span t, the area is t times w. Hold on to that. On the other hand, over this time span, n tasks are completed. For each task, there's one triangle representing when the task was served, and one parallelogram representing when the task had to wait. If the task didn't have to wait, that parallelogram might have width zero. If this is giving you like bad high school geometry flashbacks, don't worry. There will be some like cool insight at the end of this little exercise. So the area under the graph is the number of tasks times the triangle area plus the average parallelogram area. And because we've assumed that service time s is constant, the sides of each triangle have length s, so their area is s squared over 2. The height of each parallelogram is also s, and the width, on average, is the wait time w. Now, we also know that the number of tasks over this time interval is equal to the arrival rate times the time span. If the arrival rate is very high, there will be many tasks. If the arrival rate is very low, there won't be very many tasks. We were calling the arrival rate lambda and the time t, so this gives us an equation for the area under the graph. But remember, we already knew that the area was also T times W. Suspicious. So we can relate these two. We know that T times W is equal to this gnarly thing. Now, it's a little tedious, but I hope you believe me that we could rearrange this equation to get an expression for W, the wait time, as a function of the service time S and the throughput lambda. This is kind of hard to intuit, so let's bust out our graphic calculators and draw a picture. What does this look like? Well, it looks like the data that we collected in the first place. As throughput increases, wait time goes up and to the right. Even at this point, we've learned something. Without actually fitting this model to our data, we can roughly identify different performance regimes. If utilization is pretty low, that's fine. And if someone comes along and says, hey, Eben, you know, I think we should try to run the service at more like 60% utilization instead, perhaps that's something we could consider. If they want to run it at 90% utilization, that's probably a bad idea. So this is cool. We've learned something. But so far, we've just been theorizing. And remember, we made a number of simplifying assumptions in concocting this model. So does it actually apply to the data that we collected in the first place? Well, as a crude assessment of that, first let's choose a subset of the data, specifically the data that we have from sort of the sane performance regime where latency is low, the sort of data that we're likely to actually have from production. Then we'll fit the model, which I won't go into the tedious details of doing, but rest assured you can pretty easily do that with any sort of R NumPy-like statistical software. So this gives us a prediction for what will happen with latency at higher utilization. Is it right? Actually, it's like strikingly right. I swear I didn't overfit this, but it works better than it has any right to. So this is cool. This means that we can plausibly take this model and use it to sort of predict how much we can utilize a single core in our service before we start incurring a really severe latency penalty. But there are also some broader lessons to take away from this model. The first, in this type of system, and really in any type of system, improving service time helps a lot. If you find some performance optimization that just makes it so you have to do less work for every task, that has massive returns on investment. Let's think about this as a thought experiment. What if we cut the service time in half? So now we only have to do half as much work, and then we double the throughput lambda, so twice as many tasks are arriving in a given time interval. Well, because there's an s squared factor in the numerator, the numerator is twice as small. But having service time and doubling throughput cancels itself out in the denominator. So even after we've doubled throughput, wait time has improved. This means that if we somehow find this twofold speed up, we can double the throughput and still be faster than we were before. Or alternatively, we can more than double throughput while still hitting the same average response time. This, to me, is like really surprising. The single most effective thing you can do, not just to improve client-observed latency, but to improve capacity, is to make your service faster in the first place. The second lesson is that variability is bad. If tasks didn't arrive at random, if they were like perfectly uniformly sized and showed up at perfectly uniform intervals, then they wouldn't ever collide with each other. There would be no queuing. The fact that we see slowdown at high utilization is because arrivals are variable. Similarly, you can show that if job sizes are variable too, things get even worse. As an experiment, compare two task distributions. One, the green one, is tasks of constant size. The other, the blue one, is tasks of varying size with the same average. So the average cost per task is the same, but one, sizes are highly variable, the other, sizes are constant. When sizes are variable, wait time is worse. If you have to wait, you're probably having to wait for a long task. So as system designers, this is a reminder that if we want to minimize latency variability, it behooves us to measure and minimize variability in job sizes and arrivals using techniques like batching, fast preemption, or timeouts. The variance of a batch of tasks is always going to be less than the variance of a single task. So if we bundle them all together, we reduce variability. If we like really aggressively preempt tasks that are taking too long, we make it less likely that other tasks will have to wait for them. Similarly, if we use client backpressure or concurrency control to limit the number of concurrent actors, we make it less likely that different arrivals will have to wait for each other. So this is cool, but wait a minute. So far, we've just been talking about this simple model of a serial system. And we don't actually have one server. We have lots and lots of them. So what can we say about the performance of a fleet of servers working in concert? That's the second section of this talk, parallel systems. So if we know that one server can handle T requests per second with some latency target, do we need exactly n servers to handle n times T requests per second? Well, it depends. Specifically, it depends on how we assign those incoming tasks. We could assign them to the least busy server, randomly, round robin, or some other way. For example, we could assign them to the most busy server, but that's probably a bad idea. But obviously, it depends, right? So let's think about this with a little simulation. We have n servers working in parallel and a stream of incoming tasks. We take a task, we assign it to a server at random, and we measure the cumulative latency distribution. Sometimes, multiple tasks land on the same server, and so there's slowdown. Let's compare this to optimal assignment, where we always choose the least busy server. Unsurprisingly, optimal assignment works better. Servers are very evenly utilized if we can always choose the best one, and so even at high utilization, latency is essentially a constant. It's very unlikely that tasks have to wait, even though the throughput of both systems is the same. We can sort of motivate this with a probability argument. If you have one server at utilization rho, say one server that is busy 60% of the time, and a new task shows up, the probability that the new task has to queue is going to be, well, 60%. On the other hand, if you have n servers at utilization rho, the probability that a new task has to queue is the probability that all servers are simultaneously busy, which is going to be less than rho. So if we have lots of servers, each server can have a higher utilization, and the probability of queuing is the same. To serve n times more traffic, we actually need fewer than n times more servers. The more people use our service, the cheaper it is to run. Unicorn status is essentially guaranteed, right? Well, no. Here we've made one assumption that is not warranted. We think that we can optimally assign tasks to servers, but optimal assignment is really a coordination problem in disguise. First, you have to find the best server, and then you have to send the task to it. And in a real physical system, coordination is not going to be free. You can't just magically pick the idle server, especially if you don't know job sizes in advance. Instead, you have some sort of coordinator, which could be like a centralized queue or could be a load balancer. When a new task comes in, if we want to do this optimal assignment thing, well, first the coordinator has to interrogate all the servers for their current load. Then it has to pick the best one. If the assignment cost per task was some constant alpha, the time it actually took to like send the task from the load balancer to a backend, then the time it will take to process n tasks in parallel is alpha n plus s. We spend some time assigning and some time actually doing the work in parallel. So the throughput is n divided by that number. As n goes up, that looks like this. The more n increases, the more time we spend just assigning tasks, the less time we spend actually doing the work. The more we add, the fewer returns we get on throughput. Even worse, if the assignment cost per task actually depends on n, for example, because we go and ask each of the backends in turn, say the assignment cost is n beta plus alpha, where beta and alpha are like some constants that we can measure, then the throughput is n divided by that number. And as shown in the plot, this actually gets worse as n increases. Given enough servers, we spend all our time just picking the best one and no time just doing useful work. Unicorn status, endangered. So this is an example of something called the universal scalability law in action. The universal scalability law essentially says that the scalability, the returns on investment for increasing available parallelism, can always be modeled using an equation of this form. Baron is giving a talk about this and more right after this. It will blow your mind, so I suggest you go listen to him. Instead, I want to talk about a few ways that we can take this model and draw lessons as system designers. So what we've seen is kind of a pickle. At low parallelism, it would be good if we could coordinate task assignment. That would make latency more predictable. But at high parallelism, coordination becomes increasingly expensive to the detriment of throughput. Can we do something clever to trade off those two characteristics and find some scheme that works well across all scales? Well, perhaps we can. Here are two ideas. The first, approximate optimal assignment. We know that finding the truly best out of n servers is expensive, but picking one completely at random is bad. So let's compromise. We'll pick two at random, and then we'll use the better one of those two. This is called pick two load balancing, or two random choices. What does this give us? Well, the overhead is constant for all n, and it improves instantaneous max load from O of log n to O of log n, which is basically O of 1. This technique is used in systems like Facebook's Kraken and Scuba load testing and analytics tools, as well as in the distributed scheduler Sparrow and HashiCorp's Nomad product to efficiently assign large numbers of tasks to large numbers of servers. I suggest you take a look at these papers if you're curious. The second idea is iterative partitioning. And this illustrates that the universal scalability law applies not just to the small problem of task assignment and load balancing, but to any parallel process. This technique is used in Facebook's Scuba and, by extension, in its spiritual descendant Honeycomb, which provide fast distributed queries over columnar data from production systems. The way it works is you distribute your data over nodes. Nodes keep them on disk. The leaf nodes read data from disk, compute partial results, and the aggregator node merges these partial results. So it's sort of like MapReduce. The question is, we have lots of data. What level of fan-out is optimal? How many leaf nodes should we have for optimal performance? The scan time is proportional to the inverse of the fan-out. The more servers we have, the less time each one spends scanning. But the aggregation time is often proportional to the number of partial results. So it's proportional to the number of servers. This means that the scan time gets better as n grows, but the aggregation time gets worse. So the total time at first gets better and then gets worse. Again, the throughput can be modeled using the universal scalability law. This is grim, right? It means we can never scale our service beyond, 40 or 60 leaf nodes, depending on the exact value of beta. Can we do better? Yes, we can. The idea is throughput gets worse for large fanout. So we'll make fanout each node a constant. And instead of doing all the aggregation in one node, we'll do it in intermediate nodes. Thus, the total time is proportional to scan time plus the height of the tree times the aggregation time. And the height of the tree is log n. So instead of the time being proportional to n times beta, it's proportional to log n plus beta, which gives us much better scaling. Excellent. Now we can keep adding servers and keep improving throughput. Lessons. Making design decisions that work across scales is really hard because of this trade-off that coordination costs impose. But smart compromises produce pretty good results. With randomized choice, we can approximate optimal assignment cheaply. With iterative parallelization, we can amortize the coordination costs. And the universal scalability law helps us quantify the effect of these choices. In conclusion, queuing theory, not so bad after all. Model building isn't magic. You don't need a math PhD. You state your goals and the assumptions you're making about your system. And you don't need to be afraid. It's not impenetrable math. If you don't know what to do, you can draw a picture, reason about it. You can write a computer simulation. You can bust open a textbook. When modeling latency versus throughput, it's essential to measure and minimize variability and to be aware of unbounded queues, which produce unbounded latency. Finally, the best way to have more capacity is to do less work. Finally, when modeling scalability, remember that coordination is expensive, but you can express its costs with the universal scalability law. If your system needs to scale, consider whether you can apply randomized approximation and iterative partitioning to improve its scalability. That's all I have. Thank you very much.